I'm Jeannie from Tyrion's Landing, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to the Starling Tribune, Earth 2's favorite newspaper. I am the chief editor, Stargate Pioneer. My friends, they call me SP, and your other reporters for this episode number 173 of the Starling Tribune are Michelle.
So the man who took down Damian Dark is bested by arithmetic?
Ew. Remember, he got mostly D's in school. And Chris.
You have horrible taste in music.
You know what? Anybody that drives a big rig, they're fine. They can listen to whatever they want because I don't want to get squashed by them in my little bitty car driving next to them.
That's fair.
This podcast is recorded on Sunday, October 29th, 2017, live via Geeks.live. Remember, our audio newspaper is full of spoilers, speculations, facts, and other stuff about Arrow and the rest of the DC Comics, TV, movie, and comic universe.
That's right, and tonight we'll be specifically discussing Arrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could and will impact future episodes of Arrow, as well as the other CW shows such as The Flash, Supergirl, Legends Tomorrow, Vixen, Constantine, possibly Black Lightning, and we might even go crazy and talk about some old Lois and Clark, The Adventures of Superman. Who knows?
Get crazy with it.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. After the show, you can check out our content at GunnaGeek.com, where you can also find other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles.
Thanks, guys. That was a great intro to our listeners, and I think we deserve to give them some great content. So, Michelle, go ahead and break down the current episode of Arrow for us.
Yes, this is Season 6, Episode 3, Next of Kin. It originally aired Thursday, October 26, 2017. Director, Kevin Tankeron, has directed 3 episodes of Arrow, 1, Inhumans, 2, Legends of Tomorrow, and 9, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Writers, a very familiar duo, Speedweed, has written 11 Arrow and 7 Haven, and Oscar Balderrama, who's written 12 Arrow, 1 Drop Dead Diva, and 2 Eli Stone.
Speedweed! Just had to get that out. Yay! These three on the creative team and the direction team, awesome, very experienced, and I would expect this episode to reflect their talents, and I think it did. But before we talk about that, let's talk about how Arrow slid into the ratings numbers for the week. So on Monday, the 23rd of October, Supergirl had the episode Far From the Tree to a live audience of 1.76 million. Well, that's not great, but it's not bad, but it's not great. On Tuesday, the 24th of October, Flash had their episode Lucky to Be a Lady, the third episode of the fourth season, to a live audience of 2.62, which is pretty good, but not as good as Flash is supposed to be doing. And then right after Flash, on the 24th of October, Legends of Tomorrow, with the episode Zari, came in with a live audience of 1.43, which I believe might be close to a series low. I'm going to have to check on that a little bit later. And yeah, so you think with Legends of Tomorrow having such a low rating, Chris, do you think that Arrow did better or worse?
Worse.
Michelle.
Yeah, did worse.
Oh, and it sucks because Arrow came in with a live rating of 1.34 with the episode of Next of Kin on the 26th of October. Oh, we need to get these ratings up. I don't know. What do you think I should do? Should I do a strip tease in the podcast here? And that you think that would be bring more audience to the live episode of Arrow?
Yes, most definitely. Let's try it right now. Let me add a few other sites we'll stream to in the meantime, though.
Just remember, I get 50% of any of that coming in.
Oh, no problem. You can have 50%.
Yeah, 50% of nothing and still nothing.
Exactly.
Welcome to the GunnaGeek.com network. All right, since we went over the ratings, I think it's time to talk about the overall theme for Next of Kin.
Yeah, I've watched the episode twice. This is going to be my stab in the dark. Next of Kin, the only thing I can think of is Oliver handing the mantle of Green Arrow officially over to Diggle. SP, do you have a different idea of what the title could be?
Next of Kin, I would think, would be a combination of Oliver's son, William, and it was actually mentioned in this episode of Diggle's family as well, that Diggle is putting his life on the line with a family. So I think there's a little bit of Next of Kin, but honestly, it didn't seem like the central theme of the episode. It seemed like I'm reaching for the title here.
Well, to me, it was everything Oliver's doing right now is for his next of kin. And if you could argue Diggle is also his next of kin when it comes to being the Green Arrow. I mean, he's had his back since day one, so next man in the family is up to be the big daddy of the family, a.k.a. the Green Arrow.
Those are some valid points, because this episode really was sort of a transition from having Oliver as the lead, getting used to Diggle as the Green Arrow, and we saw him in action. What fight would you like to start with, Chris?
Ooh, let's start with the opening fight, because it has that awesome Black Canary scream and glide.
SP, as our resident rocket scientist.
Okay.
So, you've got Diggle jumps, then like Canary does that thing, cries, and pushes. Feasible?
Okay. So, all flight is based on air pressure. And the wings are actually cantered so that the speed of the air over the wing leads to less air pressure than the speed of the air pressure under the wing. So it creates lift because it creates a less pressure on the top and more pressure on the bottom. So that's inherently how flight takes place. Now, the same effect does so with fixed wings as with helicopters. With helicopters, it's just a air pressure which is above and below the helicopter blades, which are effectively wings. So that happens. Now, I'm a definite believer that the Bernoulli principle, which keeps those helicopters up, the same Bernoulli principle that keeps airplanes up, is going to fail someday. At some point in time, somebody's going to create an extra constant that goes into the helicopter Bernoulli equation, and it's going to cause all the helicopters to fall out of the sky. I'm a firm believer in that. Yes, science, go figure. Now, with this particular scene where you have Diggle dropping down like a rock.
Is that a GMC plug right there? So you can get a new car?
Yeah. So Diggle is dropping like a 1/25th weight of the 2018 GMC Sierra 4x4 Z71 6-passenger crew cab. Okay. So he's dropping like that, and then the Canary gives her scream, and the air pressure of the scream through the air is creating a more of a pressure on the side that the Canary is screaming from, which is less of pressure than the other side, enabling the lift to happen to push Diggle towards the building and into the windshield of the car. And let's not talk about the fact that he probably should have broken a few ribs, maybe a few other bones in his body due to that collision. But okay, it is possible that a scream that is powerful enough could push him several hundred yards, and especially if he's got no resistance other than gravity to push him over there.
It sure looked cool. Let's just put it that way.
I like Chris's explanation better.
In all honesty, that was my favorite thing there. I was like, what are they going to do here? And then when it happened, I went, oh, expletive, and leaned back in my chair as Diggle went flying across. I was like, that's really cool. I like that they're doing something new, because he can't use like the arrow version of Batman's rappel gun because he's not shooting arrows. And I didn't figure he'd be able to shoot arrows this week because of his nerve condition, which we'll touch on later, I'm sure. So it fit in with my head for how are they going to do things when he can't do the same kind of stuff that Oliver does. I was like, this is really cool. More meta stuff. Yeah.
It was cool. And it looks like Diggle has everything under control, but then Onyx comes along, the bad guy of the week, and is stealing some nerve gas. And then we have that scene where Chris's quote comes with the horrible music. One of the funniest things that I've seen in a really long time is Diggle in that cab with him driving. He's just sitting there and it's wonderful. But then they get attacked. And this brings us to our next big set piece. SP, what did you think of Diggle in that second fight?
Yeah, he was basically useless. He got out being the big hunk that he is, ready for a fist fight, and he gets shot and he falls to the ground. And that's it. He's knocked out of the fight. And he's actually knocked into the next week because he can't even think about what to order the team to do. And to a certain extent, it's like this is a team. They've been working together. They've been working under Oliver as the lead. What he says goes. So from a certain extent, I can get that. But they're all capable superheroes at this point in time. Like, they can't figure out to go and do something proactively. It's a little bit of a stretch for me, but at least they're following orders to maintain being a cohesive team. I don't know, Chris, what do you think about that?
So as I'm thinking about it, I tend to agree with you. That's when he gets lost. Now, the bigger thing I was wondering, this has us jumping ahead a little bit, is this the point in his head when he makes a decision he has to do something to make himself be confident in himself and lead the team and make the decision that we see revealed at the very end of the episode? Is this failure basically what pushes him to go, I need to do something because I don't have confidence in myself anymore and I can't lead this team?
I think the moment that he says he needs to go get intelligence from Argus is when he's going to get the serum.
Okay.
I thought he mentioned earlier that he doesn't have the tremor after that first fight.
He might have. Maybe that just blew my whole theory out of the water. I only got to watch the episode once. Sorry, guys.
We'll talk about Diggle a little bit, but he does freeze and Onyx gets away and there's the truck goes boom. But Diggle gets it back together. And let's talk about this last fight because I live tweet this and every single one of us, when we saw this slow-mo jump, look, this had no relevance to plot or strategy. This is just something that they did to look really cool. And it looked really cool. You have the team jumping into that lobby of the hotel in slow-mo. And what got me is they dive slow-mo and then they met up together as a team in the lobby. What other stuff happened that you liked, Chris, in that last big fight?
I liked making fun of the goofy glasses. Are these goofy glasses going to do anything? And I was like, okay. It kind of makes up for the fact that, yeah, they look a little ridiculous when you put them on.
Let's go down to the local souvenir shop and let's take five sunglasses off the shelves and let's just put them in everybody's pockets and that's what's going on. Yeah, that was a little cheesy.
Exactly. I love Diggle's fight with Onyx in this one, though. It felt very much like something out of like the Bourne Identity with the close-in camera, shaky cam, putting fists through windows, having a fixed point and just close quarters combat. And you actually felt it with the way they filmed it. I really enjoyed that. And it was different than something they've done in Arrow for a while. So that was cool in my book.
I love the fight with Onyx and Diggle right outside the limo. That was awesome. I think that's what you're talking about with this fixed point there. It was just awesome. And I don't even care if it was CGI'd in the fight that was on the other side of the windows. As the windows broke, it brought the fight into the car. And then eventually they did actually come into the limo. It was one of the better fights of the episode and definitely in the season here. Guys, and in the summer, I was saying, I know this is only episode three, but in the summer, I was saying, we got to get better fights this year because that is why I like this show. That is why a lot of people like this show, that in Elicity, which we'll get to later, is to actually see those street fights. And I think we're getting it this year and it's awesome. And I just hope the ratings start to reflect what we're being given because we're being given a lot of work and what these actors and stunt people and fight choreographers are doing is awesome this year.
I don't think the ratings are reflecting the quality of the show we have right now. And I think part of what we're seeing is the growing pains or the pains from shifting to Thursday night. And I don't believe there was Thursday night football this week. So it's just a crowded Thursday night time slot they're competing against things in. And I think if they keep putting on a good show and things like that, they get the social media buzz, people watching the app and things like that. The live ratings become less important. They start looking more at like the live plus seven, and they look at their own metrics internally for how it's performing on the app. I think that's what's going to determine success this season. The problem is we as viewers, we as podcasters, we have no idea what those internal metrics look like for the app.
Exactly. It is interesting, though. CW does pay attention to that, especially to the next flick views, because Riverdale got binged over the summer, and the ratings for Riverdale are even better than they were the first season. So you're right, Chris. There is hope. You know, it just isn't that live view anymore. So since we've been talking about Diggle a lot, let's go ahead and talk about his performance. He's now leading the team. And one of my favorite scenes in the episode is when Oliver comes down and has to give him that brother-to-brother pep talk because Diggle, for some reason, blows it. For me, I don't really like the fact that he blew it. I mean, this is the fifth year. This is the sixth season, so he's got 5 years under his belt. So I'm not really too sure. But that scene where Oliver calls back to season one, where he's like, you're the one that saw me more than just a guy with a list. To me, that's been like one of the best scenes that we've gotten between those two in a while.
I agree with you. And I honestly think they used just the plot sacrifice to make it so it happened. About Diggle screws up when he'd have Oliver come in for the pep talk, because it's really the only way to make it so that an Oliver who's retired from the gig will be back in the Arrow Cave or the Quiver or whatever we decide to go with as our terminology for it. So while it was a little clunky, I like the payoff that we got, because like you said, this is one of the best Oliver and Dig scenes we've had in a while.
Was really a good scene, but it got me thinking, what exactly is Oliver Queen's role going to be this entire year? Like, I've said it last week and I've said it before, once we get to the crossover, you're going to see Oliver Queen in the Green Arrow suit, because that's just what it's going to be to the other shows. Unless they really are making a change and John Diggle is in the suit instead, and then John Diggle has to interact with Flash and Supergirl and the Legends team. That would be interesting for him to lead the Team Arrow into that, but I just don't see it. I see Oliver Queen as doing it.
Stay tuned for the news. We might have an article that deals with that aspect of things. Tease, tease, tease.
Maybe, maybe, maybe. So at the end of the episode, we see somebody in the back alley, and we see a briefcase, and it's opened, and there's vials, and we see that Diggle is injecting himself with something. So I'm going to pose this question to you guys. One, what do we think it is? And two, are we getting the infamous take on the Speedy as a drug addict storyline?
Me first. So what happened was Diggle actually used his connections in Hollywood to get in touch with Carl Urban. And in his Bones capacity, Star Trek McCoy, Dr. McCoy, he gives a hypo spray that is meant to fix him, and at least temporarily. So that is the money that is being transferred is transferred to Dr. McCoy so he can do something that is being done once he travels back in time, kind of like Star Trek 4. So this is setting up the new reboot Star Trek 4.
Okay, we'll go with that.
Okay.
And what I think is in regards to the Speedy as a drug addict arc from the comics, this is sort of as close as you're going to get, but I think they're going to be more like what they did with Thea was in the role, is hint at the drug use and things like that she had in the past and never explicitly show anything and get too in-depth on it. Same thing that the Iron Man movies and Marvel do with touching on Demon in a Bottle. They don't actually do the Demon in a Bottle story, but they kind of point out a lot of the things that were in there about Tony Stark's an alcoholic, Tony Stark might be out of control. So you got some of that with Thea when they did like the flashbacks to her high school days and things like that where she had the drug problems. So I don't think that's what they're going for here, but I think they want you to think about that and get that reference. And in regards to what the drug is, at first there was a part of me was going, ooh, I wonder if this is some variant of Mirakuru, just as kind of a tie back to season two. And as I thought about it, I went, nah, that doesn't seem like what they do. My guess is this is something that Richard Dragon or whatever has put together that's coming through his organization, and that's how we get him tied into everything eventually.
One of my problems is maybe, like your guys' input, is to me, seeing Diggle from season one into now, I just seem, for me, this is like out of character. Would he actually feel the pressure like this?
Yes, I actually do. I think they're setting this up pretty well. I know it's a kind of a little bit of a stretch, but once you make that jump, it becomes a lot easier to believe what Diggle is doing. See, Diggle feels a lot of responsibility to Team Arrow. He feels a lot of responsibility to Star City. And the way to serve Star City here is to take over for Oliver, because he knows Oliver is trapped. Oliver cannot be the Green Arrow with the FBI investigation ongoing. So he knows the city needs a Green Arrow. He knows Oliver cannot be Green Arrow. And he knows that he is the only one capable of doing it. So he's going to do anything and everything in his power to do his duty, to be honorable, and to be that person that everybody needs him to be. What's going to be a little bit of problems, though, is when Lila steps in and she actually knows everything that's going on with him, that he's actually telling basically a lie in order to keep out there. And I think that might be the breaking point of the information comes out. The truth comes out to the rest of the team. And that is definitely going to be a time of reckoning, because it's not just his inability to make decisions, which happened in this episode, but probably won't ever happen again in the moment of combat. It's his actual ability to perform. And who knows what this serum is doing to him? Is it going to deflate his muscles? Is this a serum from Cord Industries? Was that the CEO of Cord that we just saw there on the side? I have no idea. So there's a lot of weaves that we still need to find out. This is only episode 3. This is a 23 episode season. So we'll see where this ends up by the mid-season finale.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. David Ramsey's performance is great. It's there. You know, he's making me believe it. So it's one of those things that I hope the writers take the time and do this arc justice.
They need to do right by Diggle, because if you look at things throughout the arc of this show, Diggle's the one that's always not quite the same between season to season. They write him a little differently depending on what the needs are of the team.
Yeah. And a person that Diggle is becoming close to in a friend way only is Dinah. And it's interesting how she, you know, has his back. She tells everyone to move on from his mistake. She's becoming his confidant. And this is what's interesting. She's becoming a big part of this season. She's kind of becoming a team leader. I read a lot of the news, and there's been a lot of coverage about her and her new suit. There's been a lot of interviews with the actor and everything. How are we liking this Black Canary? Chris?
Oh, I like it. She is basically John Diggle's Diggle, as Diggle was to Oliver Queen right now. She's his number two. She's his confidant. She's the one that he talks things through and kind of relies on for either a pat on the back or more of a kick in the butt when he's not getting things done. And she kind of does both in this episode.
I think if she had been around since season one, she would be the Green Arrow right now instead of Diggle. I know it doesn't make a lot of sense because she's actually a canary. She has a canary cry. But I think she could actually lead the team. And I think she's showing that she can right now. But you're absolutely right, Chris. Right now, she's a perfect number two.
Yeah, I'm liking it. You know, she's strong. She knows what to do. And they're friends. Okay, I'm really tired of people saying, oh, they're going to have an affair. No, men and women can be just friends.
Now, I could see like a shipper going between the two, but just me personally, I like them better as friends. I don't like them shipped.
But when it comes to romance, there's something that I have been saying for months, and I have been proven correct, and that is that Oliver and Felicity are back together.
Meh.
I'll see you later, guys.
Oh, wait. Where is he going? Okay. Well, Chris, why do you say meh?
The weakest this show got was after they got rid of the will they, won't they kind of thing and put them together. And then It just didn't work the first time around. And maybe you can say the characters have matured and things like that, but the whole Alisti thing is such a high voltage thing to touch on if you go and look at the fandom, because it's just divided. There's no common opinion. Half the people hate the idea, half the people love it. And it's why some places on like the Arrow fandom are just toxic because of their complete and utter dislike for it, and other people who feel it's the greatest thing ever and love that it's kind of getting forced back on us again. And I just kind of wish they'd let the characters move on. They hinted at it before, and then to have them drift back together, I was like, okay, we're just kind of stepping back to what got you your great ratings originally was the whole will they, won't they thing and caused a lot of intrigue. It feels almost like we're reaching to try and go back to that to try and solve the ratings issues in part.
I got it. Okay. So let's put ourselves in the seats of the showrunner. So Winnie Miracle, Mark Guggenheim, Phil Klemmer, let's put ourselves in their shoes. And you have to do something with this show. You might only have 1 year left. You might only have the season six. Where do you want to be at the end of season six? You want to have Oliver have a happily ever after ending with somebody, not saying it has to be Alisti, but somebody. And you've got his old flame, which has turned into an evil person. So what do? Do you bring in somebody new, or do you rekindle that relationship with Felicity?
You rekindle the relationship with Felicity because there's really no time to have him build a relationship with anybody else. And this is one of the reasons why I've been saying that they are going to get back together. And I figured that they were already together prior to the episode one. I was right, because at the end of the show, Oliver gives Felicity a key to his apartment. I mean, watching her tutor William, if you were like, maybe they were, maybe they weren't, in that moment, it basically said, the writers were like, they are together. And that's it.
I don't know about that. I know that William needed to be tutored, and I know Felicity needed to come in and create that bond moment with William. So I think that's the start of it, but I don't think this was the writer saying they are together, unless they're just tipping us off and saying, yeah, this is what it's going to be for the rest of the year, folks. Deal with it.
Oh, come on. Like, they don't have Khan Academy in the Arrowverse, right? I mean, come on. There are different ways to get tutoring and such.
Oliver is a big trusting guy, so he likes the personal touch. I mean, he even brought back Reza. He could have had anybody in there with William.
Right, he could have had Curtis tutor. Because you got to realize, on the tech side, Felicity is the captain, Curtis is the co-captain. And so he's like, you know what, let me ask the captain of the tech team to tutor my kid instead of Curtis. It would have been just as logical to have Curtis, right?
And I don't know, because he doesn't really know about Curtis's academic prowess yet. I mean, he kind of knows he's a geek, but he doesn't know he's a blow it out of the water A student.
You look at their qualifications, you could have asked either of them. You look at what they're trying to get people pushed towards, it's going to be Felicity. And honestly, it would make more sense for her to be the one that tutors William, because she's known Oliver for longest. He's always said she's super smart and things like that, and always been there to help with the smarter aspect of things. So that seems kind of a given that that's who he would think of for help.
I'm just glad that it's settled that Oliver and Felicity are definitely together. We don't have to have the will they or they won't they. I'm glad that they sort of did it this early in the season. So this way the writers can just be like, you know what, fans, this is the way it's going to go. And either you like it or you don't. They're down to having 1.3 million people watch every week. A big chunk of us who watch live, they're Alisti fans. I live tweet. I see the hashtag all the time. I don't have anything against it. Those two have chemistry, and I think it's just done. Let's just accept it and move forward with it.
Well, it's Arrow, so really anything can happen. Just prepare yourself for that. The Alisti might not last till the end of the season. However, if I was the showrunner, that's where I would take it. I would take it to the happily ever after ending for Oliver Queen.
Yeah, it looks like that's the route they're going if you look at some of the spoiler photos that leaked out, and that's about all I'm going to say on that.
So, any other thoughts about the episode? Anything we missed? SP?
I think you got to go back to Renee, and he's a hothead, but he's a well-meaning hothead because he sees something that needs to be done and he goes to the big hoss, Oliver, and he says, look, Diggle ain't cutting it. We need you back. Now, Oliver comes in and he handles it differently than Renee would have wanted him to handle it, but at least he's bringing forward stuff. If you want to say he squealed, okay, fine, but I think it's a legitimate concern. I mean, if I was putting my life on the line and I saw that sort of incompetence out in action, I'd be like, okay, what just happened? And I'd have a few conversations when I got back. So I think it's a positive for Renee to have done this, but at the same time, he needs to learn his place.
I think he should have talked to John before he really went and talked to Oliver. I mean, it seemed like he kind of kneecapped him.
That's fair enough.
I mean, Oliver made a point of being like, Dig's in charge. Dig is me now. Dig's running things. And the first time something goes wrong, you go and run to the old captain. That would rub me the wrong way a little bit. Now, granted, I'm pretty sure, and Diggle pretty much says he knew it was going to happen. I mean, when Oliver comes to talk to me, he goes, oh, Renee came to talk to you, huh? So he's got a read on how his people are going to react. And I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen again. I think they've kind of made their peace in regards to things like that. But per me personally, it rubbed me the wrong way.
Okay. And the other big thing that we need to talk about is the FBI agent, Agent Watson. She is still involved. She is watching everything like a hawk. I don't know why these people don't think that they're not still under investigation. I guess out of sight, out of mind, which is head scratching when you think of the fact that they're supposed to be superheroes and aware of different things. But okay, how many times has the Arrow Cave been invaded? So yeah, blind spots. So just remember, Agent Watson is out there. I think from the FBI perspective, she's doing a good job. It's just we're coming at this show from the vigilante, not the vigilante, but the vigilante team's aspect and not the FBI aspect. Although it's something that we've been asking all along is, hey, what about the cops? I mean, they're supposed to be capable too.
Should be. They're kind of decimated right now, though.
Yeah, it's always that Catch 22, right? I mean, when you look at Batman, it's like, how come the Gotham cops can't handle this? How come we need Batman or everything like that? But I love her wall. I love her just going, who are you protecting? And then she puts that, you know, picture of Diggle there. And did you notice on her board that the X is over Laura Lance?
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously she's dead and stuff, and but she has everybody else under known associates. Like, I mean, we keep making the joke year after year. How come everybody just doesn't know Ollie's the Green Arrow? You know, the same chin, the same stubble.
Well, it's the problem you're going to run into with a lot of the superhero shows, comics, movies, and things like that anymore. There's a reason, like, if you go to the MCU, most people don't have a secret identity. Because if you look at today's world, maintaining a secret identity in the world of technology and surveillance and people just taking photos with their cameras that then put on Facebook and Instagram and you could look at pictures that way. It's super hard to maintain a secret identity, I would think.
That's a good point, Chris.
Secret identity is a thing of the past, I think.
And unfortunately, that overturns the basis of most of the DC and Marvel comic universes.
Mm-hmm. That's why you've seen a concerted effort in the MCU to kind of ignore the fact secret identities is really a thing. Like, they play with an Iron Man 1 when he's just like, nah, truth is, I am Iron Man. And the movie ends. Because you can't play around with that concept that you could in the past of where Tony Stark, his bodyguard is Iron Man, but there's only ever one scene at the same time except for rare occasions. I think a lot of people have realized it's just not really that doable anymore.
All right, I got a question for you guys. How would you rank this show on a scale of 1 to 10, this particular episode on a scale of 1 to 10. Chris, what do you think?
7.5.
Okay. Michelle?
A 7.
7.5. Yeah, that's what I'm kind of thinking too. 7.5. It had some false stuff with it, but it moved ahead. The fighting was definitely great. It moved the major storylines ahead. There's still stuff that's in the background. And kind of digging the whole Oliver Queen versus the city council. We saw that last year. We haven't really seen it since until this episode. So glad to see that brought in. So I'm just looking forward to a really good mid-season finale and taking it from there. But until then, I'm along for the ride. And that includes the crossover. So that's in a few weeks. Can't wait for that.
Chris, any final thoughts on the episode?
I'm really curious to see where the whole Diggle getting drugs to deal with the tremors things goes. And I freaking love the arrow crossbow.
Oh, the arrow gun. Because it's not a crossbow. Because it actually fires the full thing in whatever, all the tech speak that Felicity and Curtis did.
It's not crossbow bolts it fires arrows.
Right. So arrow gun?
Yeah, we'll go with that. Hashtag arrow gun.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, I enjoyed the episode. One of the dings that I give it, why it's just a 7, is the bad guy of the week, Onyx, some sort of nerve gas, gold, whatever. But it looks like next week's bad person is going to be good. So next week's episode is a reversal. It's season 6, episode 4. It's going to air Thursday, November 2nd. Black Siren launches another attack on Star City just when Oliver has gotten things in order. Directed by Gregory Smith and writers Sarah Tarkoff and Emilio Ortega Aldrich.
Woohoo! Can't wait for that. In the meantime, just remember, folks, hashtag CGI tennis balls are back. Live from the Star City Tribune. No, wait a minute. Starling Tribune. Yeah, I keep forgetting what Earth we're on. We're on Earth 2, right? So it's the Starling Tribune news desk on floor 52. Chris in the main news desk has a great story about Arrow Mom.
Hey guys, remember Mama Smoke and how much we enjoyed her? Well, good news, she's coming back to Star City, they say over on TVLine.com. Charlotte Ross will reprise her role as Felicity Smoke's mother during a season 6 episode. Further details about that guest spot, still unavailable, but we know it's probably going to be sometime in the relatively near time. So, hey, that should be fun, and at the very least, it should lead to some hilarity and awkward interactions with Quentin Lance.
Mama Spoke's coming back. Awesome. So, Michelle, you actually have another story about other people returning.
Yeah. So, remember last season, they introduced Vigilante, and we had this whole, no, who is it? And we didn't really find out, and so we've been sort of speculating, who could it be?
No, I don't remember that at all. What happened?
Well, Wendy Miracle was asked about Vigilante, and she said, he'll definitely come back. We left that dangling deliberately in season 5, knowing that we would bring that character back in season 6. He'll have a really cool storyline, not just in respect to the city, but also with respect to a particular member of the team. We're intrigued, and we're kind of going through the casting process right now. We're very excited about it. They're going through casting. This means that all of our little theories and my theories and trying to play detective on who Vigilante is has to be balled up and tossed out the window because apparently they're casting the person right now.
I thought it was supposed to be somebody that we already knew.
Yeah, it looks like they're going in a different direction. So we'll find out when we find out.
Previously on Battlestar Galactica.
We're just going to throw a dart at the dartboard to figure out who Vigilante is like they did the final 5.
Yeah. For those of you that don't get what I just said, you have to go back to watch the reboot Battlestar Galactica. And I forget what it was when they started doing the season 3 or season 4. They started the previously on Battlestar Galactica and they showed us scenes that had not ever been recorded before, had not been shown on the TV. And we were like, what? What happened? This was not previously. This is new to me right now. So that's basically what the CW Arrow is doing here with Vigilante.
Disappointing.
Indeed. All right.
Or they lied.
That could be. It could be. What's the number one thing about... Who's the Doctor Who showrunner?
Stephen Moffat?
What's the number one rule about Stephen Moffat?
He lies.
Stephen Moffat lies, right. All right, got that on my system. Chris, we teased it before, and we're going to talk about it right now. David Ramsey is talking about his turn as Green Arrow.
That's right. He had a pretty good interview with Entertainment Weekly, and they sat down with David Ramsey to get the scoop. They asked if Diggle's stint as Green Arrow is going to last, to which Ramsey replied, no, it's Green Arrow. Stephen Amell is Green Arrow. It's not going to last. Of course not, but I think it's very interesting, and it's an interesting twist on how it fits into the ultimate theme of the season. I think it's very clever. I think it's an interesting detour. It gives us some time with Oliver. I think it's great, and he has some great writing. Stuff is happening between him and Deathstroke. Yes! And he and his son, and he and Felicity. It's awesome. I think holding it for the few episodes I have the mantle, that's the appropriate amount of time. So here's the key. The few episodes I have the mantle. So we're talking probably 4 to 5 episodes.
Is David Ramsey the DC version of Mark Ruffalo right now? Did he just give us information we weren't supposed to have?
He had his phone broadcasting live to Instagram during a screening of Arrow? What?
And it was him. It was Stephen Amell. So we know Stephen Amell is back. Yeah. Okay.
Here's the thing. Last week, Stephen Amell was like, we had a news story and Stephen Amell was like, nope, nope. He's out. He's out. Oliver's out. And now, Yeah.
They all know how we all are. Even the least cynical of us are going, well, there's a crossover coming up. I bet Oliver's going to be back in costume for the crossover.
So now I'm waiting for the Stephen Amell interview that he says, guys, can I have my scripts back?
I like it.
It's kind of like the thing, you know, like, how long is Barry going to be in the Speed Force?
28 seconds.
I have my own opinions on that, but we're not a Flash podcast, so I'll refrain.
Oh, we could talk about it. That's fine. I'm okay. I haven't seen this week's episode of Flash, but if you want to talk about the Flash coming back in episode one, that is fair game as far as I'm concerned.
Wally West is criminally underused, and they could have done so much more with it and built it up so that at least you get an episode, or at least don't bring it back until the very end of the episode. Let Wally be the Flash. If you've ever read the Flash comic books, Wally West's big arc as he starts as Barry's sidekick. Barry sacrifices himself. He goes into the Speed Force, and then Wally picks up the mantle and has to be the Flash, has to learn how to grow into the role, how to be him. And it is one of my favorite character arcs in all of comics. And to have them be like, oh, Barry's gone for 20 minutes and Kid Flash is on the periphery of things. And then even once Barry's back, Kid Flash is still on the periphery of things and conveniently gets knocked out whenever it's not convenient for storyline purposes. It's really frustrating.
So, Chris, you are the lead of Team Kid Flash.
Sure. Wally's one of my favorite characters in comics.
Yeah, it was really disappointing this week's episode because Wally was the Flash for 5 months. And the way they treated him in this week's episode was a crime. And poor writing. It really was.
So there's an interesting article I saw floating around. I didn't grab it for the news, but I wanted to mention it real quick. Was that, hey, what do we do with Wally? Send Wally to Legends of Tomorrow. And I went, ooh, that could be really fun. Because remember, Victor Garber's leaving.
Okay, here's the thing, though. Legends of Tomorrow comes up with lame ways to keep Firestorm apart. So do you know how many lame things they're going to do to make sure Wally doesn't do his Flash thing?
Oh, but that special effect's a lot cheaper than the Firestorm special effect, I wager. They had to have made it cost effective over, what, 3 seasons of The Flash by now?
So wait a minute. With Firestorm, is Jack's going to get a breakup cube? Thus me giving away the fact that I watched the first 5 minutes of this week's Flash episode. All right. Talking about The Flash, let's talk about Katie Sackhoff.
Yeah, Katie Sackhoff is coming to The Flash, and she's making it really look good. She tweeted out a photo of herself as Amunet Black, a villain appearing in the episode Girls Night Out. And she does. She just makes bad look good.
Katie Sackhoff is awesome, and a lot of people wanted her cast as Captain Marvel. I think she's a little bit too old for that, so any role that they could give her in the DC or Marvel comic universes, I'd be amazed at. Heck, look at Sigourney Weaver and how well she was integrated into the Defenders. Katie Sackhoff could pull something like that off. That'd be awesome.
It would. I like Katie Sackhoff. I'm biased.
I think we all do. Okay, so for our last news story this week, we're going to talk about another person that Chris is biased about, Mark Hamill.
Okay, look, Mark Hamill's been on The Flash, and he's involved with the animated part. So that's why I put this in the news story. I'm trying to justify this.
You don't need to. It's so awesome. Just leave it be on its own.
There is an animated short, and Mark Hamill is himself, and he's being kidnapped by the Joker, who he voices, and the Trickster, who he voices, and they come up upon the Swamp Thing, who he voices. So it's this amazing little short, and it's hilarious, and it's funny, and, you know, it ends with the Joker saying, "What's a voice actor?" It's like 2 minutes of just a smile. Just go watch it.
At any point in time, does he say, I'm scared now?
I don't think so.
All right. For those that don't get that, you got to watch the latest Star Wars The Last Jedi trailer. All right. Did we get any feedback this week, Michelle?
Yes, we did. We got an email from David H. And David says, I love listening to your podcast. You guys are fun to listen to, and your commentary on Arrow is a great supplement to the show. I like the connection SP made over the summer between Legends and Timeless. I also love that show. I'm loving the season of Arrow. Have you guys noticed how the relationship has evolved between Oliver and Quentin? I feel like he has become like a second father to Oliver. It's amazing how it's changed from antagonistic in season one to like family in season five and six. It's kind of sad in a way because I feel like they are going to kill him off. Also, I wanted to share this image of the Cincinnati Museum Center. If you go back to the crossover from last year and see the Hall of Justice, you can see that the attached image looks very familiar. I'm from Cincinnati, and the Museum Center was the inspiration for the original Hall of Justice.
I have, in fact, seen that building with my own eyes, as well as many, many pictures. And yes, it is indeed the Museum Center from Cincinnati. And every time I see that, I just want to go in and go, hey, guys, Superman, Batman. Let's go. And yeah, it just wouldn't go great. And I probably wouldn't say that. Actually, I probably would say that because I would completely sound like a dork. The other thing I wanted to say to David H, aside from thank you from sending the email, is thank you. He is the one. I'm the only one who he pointed out. He loves the connection I made between Legends and Timeless. So there you go. Thanks. I got a Legends Timeless buddy out there. Woohoo.
But no, I like how David noticed the relationship shift between Oliver and Quentin, and how he also thinks that Quentin's going to bite the dust.
But we've been saying that for 4 years now, 5 years now. We never are right.
I know.
And sooner or later, we will be right. But yeah, I do like the fact that he's the dad, although I had forgotten that they had been so antagonistic in season one and season two. So yeah, it is good that Quentin is right. I mean, he's his number two. He's the deputy mayor. He's right there with Oliver on a day-to-day basis. And this week pulled out some phenomenal things. I mean, Oliver basically said, go make it happen. And he went to go make it happen, stuff that he should not have had to make that happen. So Quentin really bit a couple of bullets this week for Oliver. And I hope Oliver does recognize the fact that Quentin is sacrificing a lot for him.
True that, guys. But looking at the time, we are about to start wrapping things up. But before we do that, we do like to remind folks that the Starling Tribune is, in fact, part of a network of shows that you can find over at GunnaGeek.com. There's 20-plus shows that cover a variety of geeky, nerdy, awesome topics, some that are about specific TV shows, like you're watching the Starling Tribune now, which talks about Arrow, other things that are specific about geek culture, other things about video games. We've got all sorts of things, and each week, we want to give you a taste of some of the other stuff that's on the network, and I'm going to shamelessly self-promote here to promote someone else. I want to talk about episode 284 of the All Things Good and Nerdy podcast entitled The Spinal Tap of Podcasts. In this episode, Naki might be gone, but don't worry, we've got her boyfriend Keith filling in for her. During the show, Chris, that would be me, supports the Wolfenstein 2 devs' approach to multiplayer gaming. Willie has the latest news on the death of the Kinect. Anthony has casting news for Shazam. Side note, I love the casting news for Shazam. But then to wrap up the show, Keith kicks off a discussion on how the YouTube Let's Play environment has changed for people with the rise of Patreon, Kickstarter, and Twitch. It was a really interesting conversation we had there about how the world's kind of changed. Even though YouTube's still the number one player, there's all sorts of other tools out there to try and monetize and make money versus monetizing through YouTube. And on a quick side note, don't forget that Keith, who did join us this week, is going to be doing the Extra Life 24 Hours of Gaming starting next Friday through Saturday. So go to twitch.tv/clearancevgrack and you can go watch him play some games, and feel free to chip in anyone who's doing Extra Life to support sick children or whatever charities they're playing for. It's a well worthwhile charity. I know Keith's doing it. I know that Cody and John from Unqualified Gamers are also doing Extra Life. So seriously, give it a try. Go watch some fun gaming and feel free to chip in to some worthy causes.
Indeed. Charity is something that everybody should be into, even if it's just a little bit. If you donate just a dollar or something like that, it would be awesome.
I completely agree. But we are about to start wrapping things up. So a big thank you to all of the live listeners that were in the chat room over at Geeks.live. But also thank you to everyone who downloads or replays the video at a later date. Don't forget, you can find the back catalog of our shows on our website at starlingtribune.com. gunnageek.com and all of the video replays on the Gunna Geek YouTube channel.
Chris already mentioned it, but I'm going to mention it again. Remember, you can always catch us live as we record at www.geeks.live, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Sundays every week. Also, don't forget, you can have a great interaction in our chat room, which we would enjoy. So just go to geeks.live and you'll bring up the chat room and you can talk to us live as we are recording.
We would love to hear from you. We are the Starling Tribune on Facebook and Instagram, at Starling Tribune on Twitter, and you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. That's another great episode, guys. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag Dr. McCoy comes in to save the day.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag Aerogun.
And I am at Michelle Ely, signing off with hashtag Stop Teasing Oracle. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.